This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. Dan?
Tom?
Evening?
Evening.
How are you?
Very well.
I felt we went a bit polar opposite in our intro there. I went big and loud. You went very subtle. It's a little bit like I was Dembele and you're Eriksen.
I'll take that.
So, yeah. So would I, actually.
Did you say Dembele's big and loud?
I think he's quite boisterous, wouldn't you? In his playing style. He's quite elegant, but he's
quite stylish, I think.
But he's quite a... He's like a... Dancing
he's,
bull.
He's Beauty and the Beast, though, isn't he? That's what.
Very nice, Dan. That's why you're the right.
Thanks very much.
That was beautifully done.
He's a perfect mix. He's a kind of balance of both, isn't he? Which I think is what makes him so good to watch and such a good player.
He's like a rugby playing ballerina. Yeah. You know what I mean? Sort of. You didn't. You didn't.
No,
receive,
no, no. I know
you're
going.
Receive that anyway.
Beauty and the Beast. I still think you're not going to top that.
Nicely done. Should we crack straight into Stoke, who we beat for what feels like the sixth or seventh time in a row, I think. It used to be a bit of a bogey team for everyone, really, didn't they, Stoke? Not just us. But I'm pretty sure under Redknapp, we really struggled against them away from home under the early Pulis years. But we've kind of torn them apart on the last, at least the last three occasions that we've played them. Before the game, Pochettino said that this was going to be tougher than Chelsea, which felt like a brilliant mug off. I don't think it was intended as one, but it definitely, you know, resulted in a lot of mirth, let's say. But it was, wasn't it, really, in the end? It was really difficult. First half was awful, I thought. Pretty much just Eriksen making the difference, as he has done in his own way for the last few weeks and months, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't really remember how Spurs used to get on against Stoke under Redknapp, but it does feel like they should have struggled, because it felt like everything that Stoke were back then under Pulis were the sort of things that Spurs have traditionally struggled with, like physicality,
yeah,
getting up you a little bit. Mm. And if I remember, that was the thing that Redknapp kind of identified as soon as he came in.
Mm.
And that's when he kind of bought Palacios and said, you know, we need to get someone who can kick the opposition a bit and add a bit of steel to the spine.
Redknapp once played Cabal in central midfield to combat Stoke's long throws.
Did he?
Yeah, Palacios was
injured. That was when Danny...
And we won as well, actually. We won 2-1.
What was his name? Roy Delap?
Not Rory Delap, yeah.
Or was it Danny Higginbottom?
No, Delap was the long throw guy.
Yeah, I'm sure Spurs used to struggle against them, but it does feel like for at least since Pulis left and they sort of tried to move away from that image of what they've become, Spurs have just really had their number.
Yeah.
And actually, I think the game at Wembley was the fourth consecutive game that Spurs have beaten them by four goals or more.
Yeah, it was.
Which was a Premier League record.
Oh, really?
I think, no team has beaten the same opponent by four goals or more in four consecutive meetings before.
No team has conceded more goals to Pochettino's Spurs than Stoke. 22 in, that must be 8 games.
I feel like it could even be more.
And we lost the first one, which was the 2-1 at home, after which
there were three 4-0s in a row.
There was, yeah. Then a 5-1. Lost 3-0 to them as well. Like, we seem to have battered them when we have beaten them.
I saw quite a funny poll on Twitter from a Stoke fanzine.
Oh, yeah.
I think you saw it.
Yeah.
Which is the biggest mug off by Spurs? 4-0 away, 4-0 home, other 4-0 away, or Kevin Vimmer, 80 million. And it was like 81% Kevin Vimmer.
Yeah, it was, which is fair, I think, to be honest. Yeah, 22 goals against Stoke. Do you want to know who's the closest to them in terms of goals conceded against Pochettino Spurs specifically?
That's a good stat work, mate. I would guess at Southampton.
Close. Southampton's conceded 17. Swansea, 19. Swansea always seem to get a bit of a pasting from us as well. Bournemouth, 17. Leicester, 15. Everton, 15.
Leicester, 15, about 12 from Kane as well.
Yeah. But never when it mattered, unfortunately. In the two games in 2015-16, we only scored one goal, and then they scored about 10 seconds after we scored it. Glory days.
Need to talk about that.
Yeah, so long ago. Yeah, it wasn't straightforward, though, was it? So it was half-time, got to 0-0, didn't really feel like anyone was landing anything. I think Stoke had sensed that there was an opportunity, I think, to get a bit of a morale-boosting win, because they've been one of those where results aren't happening, but apparently performances are. And I think you said last week the result against Arsenal was they'd taken quite a lot of positives out of it, and for a little while it kind of looked like they might be able to cash in on that, I guess.
Yeah, I think after beating Chelsea last week, I think what Pochettino was getting at when he said it's going to be tougher than Chelsea was that there was always going to be a danger that top four was more or less in the bag as soon as Spurs won at Stamford Bridge. Even more so now Chelsea have drawn with West Ham, incidentally. But there was always a danger that this would just be a bit of a flat game where doesn't seem to be much riding on it, and just maybe not a great deal of motivation. Whereas Stoke, as Pochettino pointed out, have a hell of a lot to play for. They're really deep in the shit.
Mm.
I think they're now 4 or 5 points adrift, possibly. So they really need to win, and it was about kind of matching that level of hunger and commitment that they showed.
In the end, they are rubbish, though.
Yeah, and in the end, I think, as Liam said on the pod last week, it's basically Shaqiri and set pieces. I think he summed it up quite well.
Mm.
And actually, their goal came from, well, a Lloris mistake, but a great pass from Shaqiri, a moment of quality. And I think he alone in that team is capable of doing that and capable of hurting Spurs. And he did. But yeah,
hit the bar as well. That
exactly.
That.
Yeah, he was the danger man. It did feel a bit flat. Dembele alone, I thought, stood out in the first half. Beauty and the Beast.
The rugby playing ballerina.
But other than that, I thought Spurs didn't really get going. Oddly, because he was so terrible when he came on, but I thought Dier was a big miss. Mm. Wanyama just hasn't been able to get going, has he, when he's come in? And
yeah,
he gave the ball away a few too many times.
Fullbacks were
rusty. Yeah, and I think the idea of rotating the fullbacks and Dier was maybe to add a bit of fresh impetus to the team that might be resting on laurels a little bit after the Chelsea win. But it almost kind of served to work the other way, and there were a few too many kind of rusty parts to the machine, and it didn't really click.
Particularly when you consider how important those roles are to how Pochettino plays, and how consistent particularly Ben Davis has been, but Trippier's certainly stepped up since Christmas, you'd say. But the idea usually is that they push up and the central defensive midfielder drops, and we had three players playing those positions that were rusty. You know, Wanyama, like you say, I don't think he's ever been great at splitting the centre backs necessarily.
It's never been
the same
his
level as Dier. So it did look a bit. It just looks a bit disjointed, I guess. It feels like a really crap word to use.
Yeah, and I think Kane looked a bit rusty as well. And
yeah. Do you think we've rushed him back for any reason? There was no real reason to the way that we played against Chelsea before Kane came on. Certainly, it has looked good, and we have scored a lot of goals with it. And you'd argue that Stoke is the sort of team that movement of a four would be perfect for them. You know, Shawcross and Martins Indy.
Are you doing that thing where you suggest Spurs drop Kane again?
I'm doing that thing when I don't like him being rushed back because it scares me.
I mean, given his comments about the second goal, I think there's no kind of keeping me out of the team at the moment.
But then surely there's a moment. I mean, I guess Poch is going to bow to how his star player feels, but I don't know. I feel like he could. I don't know. Is a half fit but incredibly motivated Kane better than a fully fit and motivated. But I know, you're getting not match fit.
I don't feel like it was. I feel like starting him at Chelsea would have been rushing him back. Mm. That would have classified as rushing him back. But he came on as a sub, obviously felt no ill effects from the ankle problem, and then had a full week's training. I don't really feel like that's rushing him back. I think it was Poch went with the strongest available team, barring the three we mentioned. So, and then that includes Kane. So, I was on board with starting him. But I do think he didn't look kind of 100% sharp.
No.
Which is perhaps understandable, because including the international break, he was probably out of training for two or three weeks. So
let's presume that we'll get on City, obviously, but let's presume he's going to play most of the game against City. And then we've got the United semi-final, haven't we? So perhaps
with,
it's all with
Brighton in between.
Oh, is Brighton in between? Okay.
Yeah, so Brighton's away. Tuesday night.
Okay.
Tomorrow week.
Okay, maybe he gets a goal in that, let's say, and then suddenly he's kind of up to speed for the semi-final. So maybe there is a logic in flogging
bit. But there might actually be a case to play him against City for 90 minutes and then rest him against Brighton.
True. That is
true. I can't see it happening, but it wouldn't be a shock.
Feels like we've got options now as well, doesn't it? Yeah. Sticks on it up front. But it was Ali and Eriksen made the difference for the first goal. I thought Ali played a really intelligent ball there. And weirdly, I seem to remember scoring that goal 3 or 4 times against Stoke last season. Like, getting round them, pulling it back, and then somebody arriving late and just putting it where the goalkeeper just can't reach it. Admittedly, the last few seasons it's been Shay Given, which is you put it anywhere low and he's not getting it. It was an observation.
It was a really good play from Ali, because it really looks as though he had to cross for Kane, even though there was, I think it was Martin Zindi or one of their centre backs would have made it really difficult for even Kane to finish that, I think. And he was the obvious option, but I think what Ali did, you know, 9 out of 10 players would probably have tried to square that for Kane, and the chance might have been cleared. But I think what he did is just showed really good composure, really good presence of mind, just to delay, wait for Eriksen to arrive, pick him out, and he made the goal, really. And I think Eriksen started the move, or perhaps gave the ball away, but then Dembele won it back with a really, really good touch.
Yeah, good pass.
So it was a lot of credit to Ali in that move, I think.
Yep, fair. We'll come on to... No, actually, let's talk about Kane's goal, in inverted commas. He said today that he swears on his daughter's life that he touched it. It touched his shoulder.
Oh, he said that afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, after the game. Now, knowing what we know about Kane, I get the impression he might actually value the golden boot slightly above his firstborn child. But it does feel like he would be prepared to use that as a pawn to get a goal.
Yeah, I actually think what makes Kane Harry Kane is this insatiable desire for self-improvement, for personal accolades. He always wants to be better.
Being a horrible father.
And he always wants to be better, and that's a really good thing. And I think we've said it a few times on here before. It's been said by people that know him well, but his best attribute by far is his mentality. Like, if you were to give his mentality to an average striker, they would be 10 times better, because it's so much of it is in his head, and it's about wanting to get better and wanting to reach goals and milestones. So I think this is just another example of that, and it is what makes Kane great. But I also think he might have gone a bit far with the kind of obsessive sort of, I think he did like a video on Twitter where he was like, it's my goal. So he tweeted Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer and asked them to back him up. Apparently Spurs are appealing to the Premier League. Well, apparently they have done today. So the deadline was 5 p.m. I was trying to find out if they've have actually appealed to have it changed.
Has that ever been done before?
I don't know if that's ever been done before.
I doubt it.
It might be without precedent.
Yeah.
But it all feels a bit much. I mean, it's nice for once that a player's not coming out and saying, I don't care, it's all about the team. It's nice that he's not saying that.
He did say that, to be fair.
Oh, did he?
He did, yeah. There was a Telegraph article that...
Well, it's nice he's not only saying that.
Yes, yeah fair.
He's got two messages here, which is that I didn't care, but also it was my fucking
yeah.
And I swear on my kid's life.
It is crazy. I think it's really funny. And I kind of... There's people that went a bit overboard with the criticism of that.
Yeah, I'm not criticising him for it. I just wonder whether it's like, Harry, mate, okay.
Yeah.
You didn't get the goal. Unlucky. It probably did touch your shoulder. Not calling you a liar, but just leave it.
Yeah. No. You've got a few more games to catch up. But do you reckon you got in trouble with the missus when you got home? You said what?
I reckon he calls the shots.
It's probably fair.
Yeah, but
he's Harry Kane.
Yeah, he's Harry Kane. But then a bigger point is, obviously Kane doesn't get paid what... Here we go.
What's that?
Spurs have appealed.
Breaking news.
I believe they have appealed.
Brilliant. That's...
but God. I think... There's a wider point here, which is obviously Harry Kane is the best striker in the world, or certainly one of them, and probably doesn't get paid the basic salary that most of his peers get paid, but he gets paid a lot of money per goal.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting at all that he's a mercenary man, because I really don't think he is, because I think we all know that if he was a mercenary man, he might not be playing for Tottenham now. But, you know, he might stand to make... quite a bit of money if that goal's...
And winning golden boots.
And winning gold. Yeah. I don't think there's a golden boot bonus, by the way. But if he hits targets and he scores goals, then let's just say it's not just the numbers that he benefits from. So he's got good reason to want the goal if he did touch it.
Maybe Ericsson's got it as well. Maybe he's got stuff built into his contract for goal
bonus. Ericsson might well have a goal bonus, yeah.
Might be a little bit of beef going on there.
Well, apparently there was a bit of dressing room beef.
There was a bit...
It has been quite funny, but I sort of feel like, Harry, mate, you know.
Yeah.
Don't, if he carries on talking about it, then...
What I want is us to get a penalty, and then Harry Kane's lining up to have it, and then Ericsson just steams in and scores it. Imagine.
A meaningless
penalty. Yeah, it's just got totally meaningless. This fourth goal in the last game of the season. Lloris, we spoke about him last week.
I staunchly defended the old boy.
Yeah, I don't think I staunchly attacked him, to be fair.
You didn't, I think you just posed the question.
Yeah, and I'm still... It's not just based on the last 2 weeks, or even this season. I think I like Lloris. I'm never going to fully love him. I'm not ever going to feel the affection for him that... I feel for Kane, or even Vertonghen, say. Like, I really love Vertonghen. And I don't know what it is about them. Lloris, so the argument at the moment is that Lloris has basically gifted us the best years of his career.
Yeah.
Joined in 2012 in AVB's first season. Obviously, first year went okay, but we were riding on Bale. Second year was a disaster, and by all accounts, I think in his own words, he said he's not... If Pochettino hadn't turned up, he probably would have looked to leave Spurs. For the next couple of years, he was one of the better goalkeepers in the league. I think he's always going to be outshone by De Gea, and now Edison as well, at least. I've never been completely sold on him. And the discussions we've had about his footwork and his distribution and stuff.
Yeah.
I've never been against the risk factor, but it's his execution of that is bad. He's not a good passer, which when you consider, we all thought he was the guy, we can play a high line, he's rush goalkeeper and he's good with his feet. I think the last part of that is a little bit of a myth that he's only getting worse. And I know that there's probably no one better. I get that, but I don't think that's a reason that we should. You know, it's a bit like Spurs being happy with finishing, you know, third or fourth. Like, we shouldn't be happy with that. The idea is that we're supposed to aspire for more, that sort of thing. And I'm not totally sold on the idea of Loris being that guy for that much longer, honestly. I thought that it was a mistake against Stoke. I think the only place he could put that, that he's going to be in any trouble, was where he decided to kick it. Kick it literally anywhere and they're not scoring.
Yeah, I really defended him last week and I said he's a high-risk, high-reward goalkeeper.
Mm.
And I suppose I'd kind of repeat that in relation to Saturday's goal. I think he's obviously, his starting position is very good. He's ready to come out. He's prepared to take decisive action and come out. And you know, 9 times out of 10, I think he probably gets that right, or he doesn't get so unlucky and he clears the ball. And that's the kind of reward element. The risk element is that if you tear off your line, if you take that risk, then something is going to go wrong. And something did go wrong on Saturday, and he did get it wrong. I know what you mean. It should have literally kicked it anywhere else than into Diouf's face.
Yeah.
And I think I've always been a staunch defender of Lloris. I think, yeah, of course, if you could upgrade anyone in the team, you would.
Mm.
I mean, for Kane, I've just said he's the best striker in the world. There's probably no upgrade. But, I mean, literally anyone else in the team, I could say to you, oh, but what about X, Y, or Z? They're better. And there'd be no argument for me against getting the better player in if it was possible. So, yes, I think if there was a better goalkeeper who Spurs could get to improve on Lloris, then why not? Especially as it feels like Kane is increasingly becoming the on-pitch captain, and that'd be a very, very easy transition to make. The only thing is, I suppose, that Poch has said that Lloris is kind of an auxiliary member of the coaching staff, and I doubt Poch has a blind spot where Lloris is concerned, but I wonder if there's a bit more there to his faith in Lloris than purely what we see on the pitch.
They've obviously got a very similar philosophy, haven't they, Lloris and Pochettino, in terms of building something. Lloris, when talking about Pochettino coming in, said he immediately took to him because of his aura and stuff like that. You know, the plans that he said that he had in place for Tottenham were what Lloris wanted to stay for. He doesn't like club hopping, and he doesn't like being, I don't know, he doesn't like things like PSG. He's not a fan of stuff like that. I think he's gone on record of saying that when he was at Lyon. So at Spurs, is a good fit for him. But I think that there's probably a reason why the biggest teams haven't gone for Lloris and why he is still with us. And part of that is down to him deciding that and Pochettino wanting him and him being captain. But there's no doubt that if Real Madrid, who have been without a keeper during the last 6 years that he's been at the club, there have been times when Barcelona have needed a keeper, when Real Madrid have needed a keeper, PSG probably still do. Despite his feelings, none of them have ever really gone for him. There's never been any talk about it, has there, really? So maybe there is this blind spot that we've all kind of got with Lloris, because he has these moments of being exceptional. He's a bit like the Berbatov of goalkeepers. Like, he's capable of exceptional, but you're always looking for a bit more that you know you're never going to get.
I think that's overly harsh. I really do. Like, I think Lloris is generally, I mean, there were times last season, there have been times this season where he's been kind of good for one goal-saving stop that he has no right to make per game. And you're laughing.
I don't think that's quite true.
I think maybe not this season, but certainly last season, I can remember periods where he was making a cracking save every single game.
Okay, yeah.
And I think put it this way, he's definitely saved Spurs a lot more points than he's cost Spurs.
Mm.
I think, as I said, he's a very good, as I said last week, I should say, he's a very, very good fit for the way Pochettino wants to play, in that he's a keeper that's so comfortable playing behind a high line. He likes to kind of command that space between the back four and the goal. He's not great with his feet, but he's very committed to playing out from the back, which is important. And I think it's very hard to find a goalkeeper like Edison who is that good with his feet. Courtois is not great with his feet.
True.
Saw De Gea make the mistake against City for
the first goal, or second goal, I think it was. Second goal, kicked it out, lost the ball. So, goalkeepers, do tend to struggle that side of the game. It's sort of increasingly demanded by the top teams, isn't it? Mm. But I think Lloris is no worse than many others. So I think there's a lot going for him, and I get the frustration, but I think the bottom line for me is Spurs couldn't actually find someone better.
Okay.
This summer.
If more pressingly, is pressingly a word?
I think so.
More pressingly, the semi-finals coming up, we mentioned there against Man United. A couple of mistakes from Lloris. Vorm was apparently injured last season for the semi-final against Chelsea. Is this the perfect opportunity to just put Vorm in for the semi, or are you still looking at this thinking just go as strong as possible?
I think Poch will play Vorm for the semi.
Do you?
I think so. He hasn't been asked directly about that this year, but last year he said he was going to play Vorm before Vorm got injured.
Mm.
And I know we had a bit of a chuckle about Vorm's kind of mysterious injury last year, but I do think Poch was sincerely going to play him before he got hurt. So I can see him playing Vorm. And actually, Lloris's form, particularly if he remains a bit shaky against City and Brighton in the next two games, I think it's actually kind of a good opportunity to put Vorm in and maybe take a bit of heat off Lloris and say, it's an easy way to drop someone without kind of denting their confidence, isn't it? And say, oh, well, actually, Hugo, you know, this was planned all along, and Michel's our cup keeper, and that's the way it's going to be.
So cup captain as well.
I was just about to say, Poch absolutely loves Vorm. He often talks about him when there's a question about a player who's not getting in the team. Alderweireld, for instance, to say, but what about Vorm? You never asked me about Vorm. He's a model professional. Mm. He's best trainer. He's X, Y, and Z. You don't ask me about him. So he really does like Vorm. And I think it would be a good opportunity to take Lloris out of the firing line. But yeah, it's a couple of games away. And Lloris could be brilliant. He could be the difference against Man City. We know he's got that in him. I mean, we also know he's got a mistake in him. Unfortunately, he's made two in a row.
Fair. You mentioned Alderweireld there. Poch insisting that it's nothing personal with him.
He did,
Purely football related, as he says. Do you believe that? Here's my thoughts on it. I think that to Pochettino, football is more than just going out onto a pitch. So when he says it's purely football related, I do think there is a bit of personal in there, in that you need, football is about, how many times do you hear Poch talk that wind chime nonsense? Like, it's about your personality, it's about attitude, it's about character, it's about your aura, your energy, stuff like that. And if Alderweireld was on the sidelines, not happy, which we know he's not, not playing, not perhaps showing what you should be to be getting into a team, perhaps not even fully fit, that's football to Pochettino, and it's not just a football incision. And the other thing, we haven't lost in the league in 2018. The last time we lost a game in the Premier League was Man City away, and I think Toby had got injured by then.
He had, since.
Yeah.
Well, it was mid-December, he got injured in November 1st.
Yeah, so, you know, this is it's a consideration to take in that we're not doing that badly without him, really.
Which I think is really strengthening the club's hand and this contract in passe. And I agree with you. I'm glad you said that, because it's kind of saved me from answering.
Okay.
But I think essentially if Toby had 5 years left in his contract and was very happy with it, then he would probably at least be on the bench at the moment. So not calling Pochettino a liar, but I think he's probably being a bit diplomatic, and there's probably a bit more to the whole situation than,
same with
than
Townsend,
simply that he can't get in the team at the moment.
Townsend, Walker, Bentaleb all got almost identical quotes, wasn't it? It's a football thing. He's not showing me enough. Everyone knows that there's something behind the scenes, but those three are good examples of what's happened, and now it's Alderweireld. Seems to be one a season at the moment, which is a little bit concerning. Who's next? Danny Rose. But City at the weekend, looking forward to this in a weird way. It's a bit of a free hit. I think it was a free hit as soon as we beat Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think it's probably always a bit of a free hit because we had a bit of a cushion. But certainly we've beaten Stoke and then Chelsea's result, or West Ham's result at Stamford Bridge as well. I think it's, we need 8 points to guarantee it now, I think. We've got City, but after that, very favourable. So you said they're Brighton away. We've got Newcastle at home still, Watford at home still, Leicester at home still. Someone else.
West Brom.
West Brom away as well, who are probably going to be already gone by then. So it looks as good as done, as much as you could say that for Spurs. Yeah, oh God. But this game is quite... It's an early kickoff. City...
It's a late kickoff.
Is it? I thought it was
7:45. Saturday night.
Oh, the late kickoff,
Saturday,
isn't it?
Saturday night.
Ah, oh, damn, I'm supposed to be going out. I forgot about that.
No, you'll not be going out.
No, going out. Okay, fair enough. Well, it doesn't change anything, I suppose. It's just, by then, games would have been played, wouldn't they? So, they can't win the title against us. That's the important thing,
isn't it? They can't.
And also...
Because United host West Brom.
Yes.
On Sunday.
So, yeah, that's right. But nice not to give Walker a guard of honour, isn't it?
I suppose it is, yeah.
Do you think there's... A couple of people suggested it would have been a bit of an important moment for Spurs because he would have been seeing your old teammate who was literally there less than a year ago walking out as champions in front of all of you who've stayed. It's not... Literally, Walker's the only player that you'd lift out of the team from last season.
Yeah, I think I said it a few weeks back. It would have been... It would have felt quite significant, even if it wasn't actually significant for the players, to give Walker the guard of honour. I think it would have just been the kind of a symbolic confirmation that his decision was entirely justified.
Exactly.
And worked out perfectly.
If he'd have walked out wearing a clothes full of money as well, yeah, it's the only other thing that could have made it worse.
He left to get paid more and win trophies, and here he is on three times what they're all earning with a guard of honour. But I mean, it's not going to happen, and none of those things are now untrue just because they can't win it at Wembley next Saturday. Though incidentally, Walker has now cost them, he's cost them the FA Cup because that was his mistake that let Walker in.
Yeah.
And I thought he was very poor against,
Liverpool.
Against Liverpool. I'm probably responsible for certainly the first goal and possibly Mane's goal as well.
He certainly didn't cover himself in glory. I don't think he looked fit, to be honest. And interestingly enough, we argued last season about him not perhaps being able to play a certain
game. Well, I don't think it was his fault that they are 3-0 down to Liverpool ahead of tomorrow's game.
But
it was Guardiola's tactics and Liverpool's brilliance, but... Nonetheless, I think actually it's one of those deals where for so long it looked like that's a great bit of business from City, but I think we've just got a reminder in the last few weeks that he is the kind of bloke that
rolled back the years at Anfield.
He's the kind of bloke that makes those mistakes. Not that Sergio Aurier doesn't make those kind of mistakes, but you know what I mean.
Different kind of mistakes.
Worst mistakes.
Yeah. Stupid mistakes. Yeah. So I think it's interesting. So when I was doing my goals since Pochettino took over stats work earlier, I also did a how many we've conceded against the other top six since Pochettino took over. City are joint top with Liverpool and Chelsea in that. So we do concede a lot. However, in the goals that we've scored since Pochettino took over, Man City, we've scored 12. We're only like minus one down on Man City. When you consider when Poch took over, we'd just lost 11-1 on aggregate to them the season before under AVB and Sherwood. It's quite remarkable as a turnaround, and when you consider how strong Man City have been in those times. But top of Chelsea, we've scored 14 goals since Pochettino took over against Chelsea.
Wow.
It's crazy, isn't it? I couldn't believe it. I had to double check my figures, and then I believed them.
Good.
Good stats. But City seem to be that team. We've done okay against them, haven't we? Particularly at home in the last few seasons. We lost in Poch's first year, but then won 4-1, 2-0 in the two seasons afterwards. 2-0 was without Kane. A different City, but is it a different City that we're playing considering the last 2 weeks? I mean, that Liverpool, is a Liverpool city, result yeah. looks damaging, but to be those two games to come 5 days apart, and in they've only played well for one half of two games, I think they're going to be in trouble against Liverpool at home. I can't see them keeping a clean sheet. And suddenly, a shaky defence, certainly last season, didn't look too bad this season because of how good they've looked going forward. But suddenly it all looks a bit shaky. And if you're Otamendi, Kompany, Walker even as well, and whoever the hell they're going to play at left back, and you're coming up against an in-form Eriksen, an in-form Ali, Son who's going to run at you all day, and a Harry Kane that wants to score any amount of goals that he can, there's a chance for us, isn't there?
Yeah, there definitely is. And obviously a lot depends on tomorrow night. Just have no idea what's going to happen. I could easily see City being 2-0 up inside 20 minutes. And who knows from there. But I agree with you that I think Liverpool will score. So I still fancy Liverpool. But potentially they could be coming to Wembley on the back of certainly two really damaging defeats, and then perhaps a really frustrating night, or another, quite conceivably another damaging defeat, and they could be at the lowest ebb they've been at for quite some time, confidence wise, and then it's a real task for Guardiola to pick them up. Pochettino obviously has a good record against Guardiola. Spurs have a decent record against City under Pochettino. And I think
good record in the big games at Wembley as well.
And a great record in the big games at home, and particularly at Wembley. And so, yeah, definitely they're there for the taking. And while it feels like a free hit, it also feels kind of quite significant in terms of getting a bit of revenge for the game at the Etihad. And looking ahead. And if Spurs want to go for the title next season, then City is going to be the team to beat again.
He said last week about Chelsea is that in terms of that rivalry, Spurs needed to hurt Chelsea. They needed to leave a proper wound on them. And with City, it feels like we need them to go into next season, even if they win the title, when they win the title. Just we need to find a hole, don't we? Like, there's got to be a gap somewhere. They can't just dominate for the rest of time.
We need to show them where to spend another 200 million.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Get Toby in for 20 million and sort everything out, probably. But
yeah, and I agree that it's a free hit, but I also think it would be a big, very big one to win. I think we can have our cake and eat it. If Spurs lose, we can come on and say, well, it doesn't really matter. City so much better than everyone else. Look how far ahead they are, and they were hurting, etc., etc. But if Spurs win, we can come and say, oh, that was significant. That felt big.
It's obviously ramifications for top four, but where we finish in that, if you like. Do you think second is realistic? Or is United win against City probably put...
Yeah, but at half-time at the Etihad, I thought second was very much on for Tottenham. And now it looks like United are just going to do enough. And they do seem to be... It feels like they haven't really played well all season, you know. No. You look at United and you're like, how are they second? Liverpool and Spurs have played so much better. But actually, they do just get results, don't they? Mm. And the City second half was brilliant. And I watched them against Palace a few weeks ago when they came back from 2-0 down, won it with a last-minute goal from Matic. Mm. It was very impressive and resilient. I do think United will probably get over the line and get second. I don't think their run-in's that difficult.
Mm.
I think if Liverpool have one eye on the Champions League, which it looks like they will, then Spurs should finish ahead of them in third. I think you saw how Liverpool struggled when they rested Firmino and didn't have Salah against Everton. They were just very blunt, and Everton are absolutely terrible, by the way. I watched that game. So I think presumably Liverpool get through tomorrow night. They're going to the Champions League semis. They'll have to rest a few more players in the league again. They'll probably have to rest Salah. Harry Kane will be very happy.
Yeah.
And Firmino for one or two games. And I think that gives Spurs the edge to finish third.
Which would be, and again, we'll touch wood, but to finish top four in a season away from White Hart Lane, or away from your home... I think we said it at the start of the season when we were doing like predictions and stuff, and we were saying you say like title because you do, and fair enough. But I think we all kind of agreed on a midway point of top four would be amazing, incredible achievement. and it's looking likely, let's say, it has to hit home a little bit, considering how we started at Wembley. All right, you can point to all those things and say, well, if it wasn't for that, we could have been in the title race, or we'd be long way second if we beat Swansea, Burnley and whoever else at home. But it didn't. And at the end of the day, we're still on for a good, really healthy points total. It's not just because Arsenal and Chelsea are shit. You know, Chelsea was 7 points ahead of us at Christmas, I think it was. And we've completely turned that round with our form. I mean, it's amazing. Like, this is
huge
for us. The best, probably the best achievement of Poch's tenure.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. It's kind of easy to forget that we came into the season and Wembley was such a big negative issue. Because now it feels like a positive, doesn't it? We're saying, oh, actually, City to Wembley.
It certainly feels like a home game. It does feel like a home game. It really does.
And that's huge credit. And it wasn't so long ago. I think it was sometime in November as well that Poch even said, oh, you know, playing at Wembley feels like a bit like an away game still.
Mm.
And it's amazing how quickly that's just turned around. And actually, the funny thing is I think Spurs are always good over Christmas, and they're always good in the second half of the season. They're always better. But it feels like in so many ways the catalyst for the form was that defeat at the Etihad.
Mm.
And in a way, City maybe did Spurs a favour by drubbing them badly. Bit of a lesson, yeah, but obviously unbeaten since then. And I think Poch's pride took a real hammering, and he fixed things up. And it was, I think at that stage of the season, looking back, Spurs were coasting a little bit. Eriksen and Ali certainly weren't doing enough. They're certainly not playing like they are now.
Mm.
And there were probably too many players. Dier is another one I can think of. Perhaps even Dembele, who just weren't at the very top of their game. Mm. And it does feel like, yes, it's the second half of the season thing, but also something happened there. And I'm looking forward to going to Poch's press conference before the City game, and hopefully he'll get into that a little bit and explain how he turned it around after that defeat, because that was one where the golf and class was just so obvious.
It felt like we were putting our place a little bit.
Yeah, and even before that game, there was still some vague talk of the title. I think City weren't that far ahead, and no one really knew if they were going to collapse or hit a bad run. But that, you know, after that, it was just like, right, you know, they're 15 points ahead now. They're not going to win the title. And that was the ambition at the beginning of the season, Wembley or not, to improve on last year. I suppose I always want to improve, and then it kind of hastily got revised around about that point. But yeah, it feels like revenge will be a factor on Saturday. I think
gives us a good base to go into next season as well, because I think there was a bit of fear. Think of how good we were in the last season at White Hart Lane. This season looks to have been a relative success. We might say top four we think would be that. But I think that considering how we started at Wembley as well, and when you think that new White Hart Lane is going to technically be our third home stadium in three seasons, regardless of it being in the same place and how, you know, you in particular have said before that you don't think it's going to have a huge impact because it's in the same place and stuff like that. But it is a third home stadium. It's a new place to get used to. But to see what we can achieve when you go to somewhere as unfamiliar and unforgiving as Wembley as well. We did have a bad record at Wembley. And to come out of it with a season of what you'd call success. Champions League as well, you know, the teams that we managed to take to Wembley and beat there, just there's a foundation to build on to next season. There's no reason to start slowly, you know, and build up the momentum of having this new stadium that everyone's excited about. We're going home, kind of, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's more than just a good achievement for the season. If it was like in context, it could be a massive factor for whatever happens in the next couple of years, I think.
Yeah, completely agree. Couldn't have put it better. I think this season was always going to be a season of transition.
Mm.
But the important thing was to not take a big backward step. So if Spurs had scraped fourth on the last day, I think that would have been a massive success. Because it still could say, you know, we haven't gone backwards, still in the Champions League, you can still offer that to the players, can still hopefully offer them more money on the back of Champions League football, which I think most people have seen the accounts by now, it does make a difference. It does make a difference to a club's income and revenue. And to have that in the bag, or very nearly in the bag, with still a chunk of games to go, you know, 6-7 games to go, is a really impressive achievement, particularly given, I think, Spurs dropped more points in the first two games at Wembley than they did in the whole of last season at White Hart Lane. And at that point, you just thought, well, this is going to be a very long, hard season. And it might be that we have to take a step back to go forward. You know, it might be that we have to move backwards in order to get into this new stadium. And that would have been completely understandable. But instead, it looks like kept our foot on the pedal and we'll go into the new stadium in a really, really strong position. And I think that was actually Pochettino's message after the Stoke game. He talked a little bit about the new stadium and having Champions League football there, and I think probably, I wouldn't want to put words in his mouth at all, but probably he did feel that after the Stoke win that top four was just done. About wrapped up. And actually, if that's the message he's getting across to the squad, which I very much doubt, but if he's saying, look, you can relax now, then all the better, because I think a relaxed performance against City will be a good performance.
Yeah, quite possibly. The game itself, we'll finish on the game itself. Do you think we're looking at Trippier and Davis? Trippier in particular had a really tough game against Sane, didn't he? But Rose played on the other side, if I remember rightly, at the Etihad. I don't know who his direct opponent was, but this was just as he was starting to get a little bit rhythm back, Rose.
Would have been Sterling, I think.
Probably, yeah. I can't remember, but I know that I would, at the moment, I'd be backing Davis, certainly, and I'd probably still have a go with Trippier. And he's, you look at how Alexander-Arnold dealt with Sane the other day, there's obviously a blueprint for stopping Sane, and it can be done one-on-one. Do you think Trippier is good enough and has learned enough, do you think?
Yeah, I think he has. I tweeted today, it was more of a wondering. I wondered if Pochettino had put Aurier and Rose in against Stoke to give them a bit of game time ahead of a surprise start against City.
Okay.
Purely because, obviously, Trippier and Davis are very much first choice, and deservedly so. They've been much better than Aurier and Rose. Certainly in the last few months, and they were brilliant in that run of games against United, Arsenal and Liverpool, where they really cemented their first team spot, I think. But Trippier got an absolute roasting against Sané at the Etihad, and he's on record. He did a mixed-zone interview with Ben Pearce and me, where he kind of openly said, you know, it really knocked my confidence. And
you said it after the City game?
No, it was about a month ago. It was a few months later. Okay. Ben and I were thinking, he hadn't stopped in the mix zone since, and we were thinking, you know, that'd be an interesting topic to get into him on, because it was just after he had come through those three games, and he'd been brilliant, and we wanted to, you know, ask him how he went from there, the Etihad, which must have been a low point for him, because he was rinsed time and again by Sane, to having probably his best three games for the club in three of the biggest games of the season. And he was very open and said, you know, it was a learning experience for him. But there must be a bit of doubt in Pochettino's mind about whether just to take him out of the firing line, put Aurier up against Sane.
That's the thing, isn't it? the guy behind him in the pecking order, you do
that,
wonder.
That is the thing, yeah. But we know that Pochettino has trusted Aurier in big games. He trusted him at Juve, with remarkable consequence. Well, he got away with it at Juve, didn't he? But he has trusted him in big games, and he is quicker than Trippier, and Sané is frighteningly quick. And the ball that City seems to just love playing is that one where Silva just threads it in between the fullback and centre back, and then Sané's in behind, and it's very, very difficult to stop. And It might be in his mind, and similarly, he played Rose at the Etihad when Davis was fully fit.
Yeah,
that was, I think, as you said, when Rose was maybe just coming back into a bit of rhythm. It's before he got the other knee injury, the kind of recurrence of the old one. So I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't
put it past him.
To spring that shock and play those two against City. But then, as people have pointed out, that there's a big difference between a Wembley game and a game at the Etihad. Mm. And Trippier's actually been very good in the big home games at Wembley.
And form as well, like Sané has been. You know, he was schooled against Liverpool a little bit by a really young guy. And Sané's a young guy himself. If he starts tomorrow in the Champions League and has a similar sort of experience, really can't get anywhere with it. You've got a guy that you can get into his head a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
so it all adds up, I think.
I like your optimism.
I don't know, I think if there's anyone that Pochettino seems to be able to get in the head of, it's Pep Guardiola, and our players seem to be able to get in their heads as well. It's just a shame that they don't have Claudio Bravo in goal anymore.
Oh, that'd be magnificent. They might. Edison might get hurt. The big question for me, the most interesting,
something might happen to him.
He might get hurt.
The biggest question for me that is, can Spurs control possession against that City side? And obviously that's what Pochettino wants to do in every game, particularly at home, and it's the way he wants to play. And we've had the conversation on the pod a few times about the games when that didn't happen, like the Real Madrid game, the Liverpool game at Wembley, the Borussia Dortmund game at Wembley, and actually Spurs won anyway, playing a really interesting, reactive kind of counter-attacking style, but then since said that wasn't deliberate. We then thought they were going to do that in the games against Liverpool at Anfield, maybe United at Wembley, but didn't completely control possession, controlled the ball the whole second half at Anfield. And I think Pochettino will want to prove that Spurs can kind of out-possession City. But that would be really, really hard. And it'd just be interesting to see how the game pans out, because I think he'll want Spurs to have most of the ball, and the City don't have Fernandinho.
I was going to say, what's happened to him? Is he suspended? Or?
He's suspended. He got a fifth yellow card against United.
So the likelihood is it's going to be a midfield of De Bruyne, Silva...
And Gundogan.
Probably. Yeah, he's had a bit of a shocker in the last... He scored a really good goal, but I think he got hooked,
I think he was a scapegoat for the Liverpool result because he doesn't normally play, and Sterling would have normally played. But he's got options. You know, he could even put.
But once we're in their head,
I like this. I like this in the head thing.
Yeah.
But it will. Yeah. Fascinating game and.
A good Saturday afternoon. Evening. Sorry, kickoff. That's a good one. I think.
Yeah, I'm not keen on Saturday nights. Football.
I'm not.
It's not for me.
But if it's going to be a game, then this strikes me as one of the ones that
I think if I was going as a fan, I would like it, because you could get to the pub. And I'm not advocating all day drinking here, but but you could.
It's so good.
You could get to the pub, have a nice old lunch, and then settle in, couldn't you? And then you've got the game at the end of it, and I think that would be great.
Mm.
But just for me, like, I'm going for work, and it's just like waiting all day to go to work in a way.
That is, you know what I mean?
I don't have to leave for work until like 5 o'clock. What am I going to do on a Saturday?
No sort of club Wembley meal.
I get a meal.
All right. Well,
but I don't want to go and sit at Wembley at like 4 o'clock.
Why not?
It's a bit odd.
Is it?
It's what the weirdos do.
Who you call it? Who specifically are you singling out there?
I honestly don't know, that's all.
Give me a pass, I'll go. I'll get a free meal.
No, I want the meal. You misunderstand me. I just don't want to go that early. I will go for the meal at 6.
Drinks at 7. mm-hmm. All right, let's end it there.
On that.
We had a few list of questions, but we've run out of time, I'm afraid. Dan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Be a good one next week, I think, with a City review.
We'll try and get an actual guest on as well.
Yeah, Brighton and Man United coming up after that as well. So that, going to be interesting, I think. Is Brighton, isn't it?
It is Brighton on Tuesday,
In midweek.
We'll sort something out.
Shall be interesting. Thank you very much for joining us. We shall see you next week. Bye.